Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
What's going on, guys? It's your homeboy T-Pain, a.k.a. your girlfriend's boyfriend. Have you had a chance to listen to the new podcast? Now, I want you to stop what you're doing right now and jump over to my new show, the Nappy Boy Radio Podcast, with me, T-Pain. Every week, we're talking to the hottest guests from the worlds of music, entertainment, comedy, gaming, and so much more. And they're all stopping by to shoot the They hang out. They enjoy some custom drinks. Did you know every guest on my show has a drink named after them?
This is the Mild Paralysis.
And the name of the drink is the Jazzy Fizzle.
Oh, yeah. You're going to make me cry. Yeah. Tell me, we got a goddamn drink for you, and it's called the Mother
Butterscotch.
No, you got to say it like this. Butterscotch.
Listen. On my show, we pretty much have some of the most interesting conversations you ever heard. We just kind of chill, you know what I'm saying? Listen and subscribe to the Nappy Boy Radio Podcast with new episodes every Thursday on Apple Music and wherever you get your podcasts at.
Well, in this episode, we do a lot of electric car talk. We talk about the new Tesla stuff, the truck, the Rivian, Singer,
Porsche. Singer. We got to hit a little bit of gas engine stuff.
A little bit of gas engine stuff and some Genesis stuff. First, there's Geico. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com. Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a choice. We've got a mandate. Get it on. And welcome to CarCast, Madam Carolla. That's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, over there.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What are you driving, a Genesis?
The Genesis. I was talking about it with Goldberg earlier this week, and it seems like every year when as I get to drive a Genesis and they progressed over the years, they just continue to impress. So I've got a G70. Which is their small sedan. They're going after the BMW 3 Series.
Mm-hmm.
There's two engine options. I've got the V6 turbo. I think it's 365 horsepower.
Healthy.
And the all-wheel drive version of the car does 0-60 in 4.5 seconds.
Wow.
And it handles great, pulls, I don't know, 0.94 Gs with the summer tires and like... Or 9.1 and 8.4 with the...
On the skid pad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the all-season tire. So, but if you peek inside it, like, it's a dark blue. It's got a beautiful black interior, but diamond stitch.
Diamond stitch.
And all of the accents stitching is done in red. So the diamonds are done in red. The door panels are done in a red stitch. And then the red seatbelt to give it a kind of a sporty look. And it's nice. I mean, it's just nice. It starts at like 38 grand. I think the one I'm driving with everything is about 52 or 53.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I got in, it was like, yeah, I haven't been in the small car for a while because we've been driving so many different SUVs. So it felt a little small, like the back seat was a little small. Mm-hmm. But then I realized that's this segment. You know, it's the 3 Series car. It's the... And it's great. You throw it around. It sounds good. Looks good. Interior is great. You can see it's not a Jag, right? Like, you know, some of the quality of the buttons and the tension on the buttons, a few things aren't quite there. But they try to give a good feel to the buttons and controls you use all the time. But for some of the things like the different drive modes, there's a little dial, how often you switch it into Sport or Sport Plus. Something like that had a little bit lighter feel, a little bit of play in it. But it's nice. They've got a little SUV, the GV70. It's this car, the G70, in an SUV version.
It's the bigger one, the 90?
The 80, and there's a 90 and an 80. I think with the cars, not with the SUV yet.
Yeah. So, you know, I was the guy who was talking about the Genesis versus the Audi A7 years ago when I was looking at a lease. the thing about a company, it takes a few years of quality for the stigma to sort of wear off. Now, you know, when it comes to a sports franchise, you know, Cleveland can go, the Browns can go 2-14 one year, and then the next year they go 11-5, and everyone's just right back on. You know, it's like, hey, Browns playing lights out ball. In the car world, it's like Cleveland goes 2-14. I know they're playing 17 games now. This is of yore. And then it takes like seven seasons of them playing 11-5 ball before people start to go, you know, it takes a little while. So Genesis had sort of the Hyundai thing, and it was also, I guess it's Korean, and people are like, I don't know if I'm ready for a Korean car. And now it's been a few seasons, and the product, you know, they're going 12-4 every season now, and people are starting to go, okay, I'm coming around.
And
see,
I mean,
more
to your point,
more of them on the road.
They've continued to, they've hired good designers. They're starting to win on design, which is a big thing. Mm-hmm. And then they started to win awards. The SUVs are winning. The cars are winning. And then, you know, more and more of the books are going, hey, start paying attention to Genesis because, you know, if you take the badge off that car and they test cars sort of equally, you start to figure out it's definitely worth checking out. It's definitely worth checking out.
Well, I think what you always want to do is, you know, if you can get past the badge, you want more. You're going to get more for the company that's sort of on the come versus the one that has the established reputation because they just have to.
Yeah. But the badge is getting better. The nameplate's getting better. Now when you say, oh, I got a new Genesis, you go, oh, that's a nice car.
Right.
And also you kind of think, you're kind of a smart person, right? Because you're getting the most bang for the buck. Like you're getting the luxury features of BMW and Audi in, you know, Lexus in a car that was probably priced better.
Yeah. So it's a nice piece.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. I'm a fan.
I'm looking down the list here. I'm seeing that Porsche Motorsport North America has agreed to build engines for Singer.
Yeah, so this has been a weird thing because Singer and Porsche haven't always got along, right? Singer was doing their Singer 911s, and Porsche was throwing a fit going, there's no such thing as a Singer 911. Mm-hmm. There's a Porsche 911. I don't know what you're doing. And that's where they came up with the Porsche 911 reimagined by Singer, right? We see all the badges now on the cars reimagined by Singer. That's Porsche, you know,
saying don't,
yeah, we don't like what you're doing here. Mm-hmm. And somehow the relationship has evolved that, Porsche Motorsports North America, their headquarters is out here in Carson by their little test track.
Yeah, you pass it when you're on the five.
They're going to be making the engines that I believe Ed Pink was making previously, the nice engine that they spec'd out and they kind of designed, and they went to a builder like Ed Pink and says, we need a 3.8 liter and a 4 liter, flat six. This is how we want it done.
Air-cooled?
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a good question. I think it still is. I don't know if they did anything differently. Maybe was the when we saw it, we saw the engine like on display at the Quail years ago, and I don't remember if like the thing was it going to be water cooled. I want to say still air cooled.
No, Chris will have to look it up.
Look it up, make sure it's still.
I don't know, but if I know Singer, they probably would have wanted the old school air cooled.
I think so.
Certainly,
I've seen air cooled.
Air cooled, yeah.
For the sound.
Not to, yeah.
Definitely wanted that air cooled sound, but also the kind of homage to the past and all that kind of stuff.
And you remember when we went to Goodwood, and I think we talked to Dario Franchini, and he said he was doing stuff with Singer, and they debuted like the $1 million Singer with the high output 4 liter, it's a 500 horsepower engine. That's done by like Williams and Nicholson McLaren in the UK. So that engine is still going to be built in the UK, but the engines here for most of their cars, I guess production is going to shift from Ed Pink to Porsche.
Nice.
To some Porsche here in the U.S., some, you know, Porsche's Motorsport North America. And I didn't even know they built engines, but
well,
I guess they're getting worked out.
I guess Porsche, I'm guessing, everyone is getting in touch with their heritage. And everyone is realizing that, I don't know, much like some network revamping sitcoms, you know, now we're doing live versions of the facts of life on TV
and
All in the Family and stuff. Everyone's getting into the retro shit, you know? And I think they used to kind of distance themselves from it. You know, getting back to pro football. Pro football, if you walk into the training camp of the Dallas Cowboys, you'd see big pictures of Coach Tom Landry and Bob Lilly and these big Tony Dorsett. Like, they pay homage to the guys who came before them, kind of thing. But other car manufacturers and stuff like that, they kind of was like, bigger, better, what's next? You know, don't worry about the past, you know. They're all getting into the past. They're all getting into the heritage now. And, you know, we've talked about Ferrari and
Jaguar classic services,
Porsche.
Mercedes, I think, is going to rebuild.
They're all like doing kind of weird repops and restorations and stuff. So now I think Porsche is looking at something like Singer and going, wait a minute, this is a homage to us. This is a tip of the cap to us. This isn't someone ripping us off.
And it's kind of a smart move on a couple levels that I was thinking about is, one, with Porsche building the engines, it's a revenue source for them. And now they're saying, we're going to get a little something out of this deal.
Mm-hmm.
Also, with the Singer prices going up, that helps all of the aftermarket with Porsche, and it reflects the new cars. Because you look at it and go, hey, like you and I have talked like, oh, you know what would be cool to get? A GTS, Targa, manual transmission, center lock wheels, that's going to be worth something one day. And Porsche's thinking that, going, hey, look at the aftermarket in Porsches. Look at the used cars where they're going. Imagine what our new cars are going to be in 20 or 30 years.
Well, you look no further than bring a trailer and it's, you know, they got GT3s from 2013 and $500,000 or whatever. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know. There's so many variants of the Porsche 911. I'm never sure which one is the Y-Shock version or why it's so expensive or whatever. But modern day Porsches that are 5, 7, 9 years old fetching big buku bucks.
Now, from Singer's perspective, I think this is significantly going to increase the value of the cars on an ongoing basis. I think people are going to, granted, if the engine's done well.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I think we know it'll be done
well. It'll be done well, right? So now you're thinking, oh, I'm going to get a Singer with a Porsche engine, not really like a Singer engine.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting like a Porsche Singer engine.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine there's going to be some discussion at some point, 2 or 3 years down the line, when the engines are out there going, oh, I've got a Singer. You've got, you know, you got the original engine or you got the Porsche engine? And then what does that mean? Like, what's going to be more valuable? But like, if you were going to a company that was recreating cars on some level, and you're like, oh, yeah, so-and-so builds this engine, or, you know, Edelbrock repops the heads and the manifold or whatever. It's just like, yeah, but who's putting it together? Who's doing it? And you go, well, this is a real Ford engine. This is a real Porsche engine, a real Jaguar engine. I think it's going to do something for Singer, especially in this kind of increasingly competitive world of these reimagined vehicles, Broncos and stuff. Like, for Singer to go, we closed the loop, right? Mm-hmm. We started with early Porsche. We did our own thing, and now we're back to getting Porsche involved, right? We're the first to do that. I think that's cool.
Yeah, I think the trend now is a lot of these reimagined Broncos and Porsches on one side of the collector car spectrum, and then the other is just modern-day stuff. Ford GTs, first gens, you know, just not first, but 05. Those have popped, you know.
Yeah.
Those are 450 now all day long. The new GTs, you know, lots of even the McLarens are starting to kind of creep up, but lots of the newer Porsches,
right?
Or, you know, we always talk about Spyker. Like, there's lots of modern day shit. LFX, I guess. LFA. I just put an X at the end of everything.
Well, I was thinking FXX and LFA combined into one amazing car.
The Porsche GT, I think one just went
Carrera
for like,
GT.
Carrera GT just went for 1.9 or something. I mean, that's a relative, I don't know, was that 05 car, 03 something?
Yeah, something
I mean,
like that.
These are modern day cars, you know what I mean? And, or cars that are less than 20 years old. And, they just popped. That's the market. I mean, maybe the whole market is popping, but those are really popping now.
Well, we definitely know that everything is high right now. Everything's very, very high. All the values and everything are going nuts. But yeah, it really has trickled to it's interesting because we've talked about in the past there was Benz special edition cars that never really got the value.
Mm-hmm.
And now the special edition cars are getting noticed. People are into this hobby much more, people with means, I guess. And the special edition cars are the ones standing out like they intended, like the manufacturers intended. They actually are really starting to stand out more, you know. And you're going to trickle down. You're going to see a modern day Aston Martin, you know, DB11, James Bond edition, whatever, and you're going to like, well, you know, all things being equal, when that's sitting on the floor at Gooding, that one's going to get $30,000 more than the regular DB11, maybe $60,000.
Yeah, even the Aston Martins are trickling, trickling up, who sort of traditionally, and maybe it's always just been kind of an English car thing, but Jags have been the same way, which is to come out with something kind of cool. And they just fall off a cliff, and they never really recover. But even those are starting to tick up.
They are. It started years ago with one of their racing cars. We were at RM at the hotel there, and they're like, world record for a British car, world record for a Jag, world record for this. I was like, yeah, it's $8 million. Eight something million dollars. And we're like, world record across the board for those types of car. And now I think we've already blown that number away.
Chevy Silverado EV sold out in 12 minutes.
Yeah, they didn't really tell us how many they were going to make. But when they say sold out, they mean the orders.
Mm.
You know, Ford announced everybody with a Lightning, not everybody, but everybody that made a reservation, paid the $100 deposit for the Ford Lightning.
Which you did, right?
I did. The first batch of people, I don't know how many, the first 10,000 or 20,000, were able to go into the dealer now and build it and order it.
Mm-hmm.
When that news story came out, GM released the same, you know, hey, we've got a Silverado EV that's coming out. But in 2023, spring of 23, and the initial launch of it is going to be the fully loaded $107,000 Chevy Silverado EV called the RST. And that one sold out in 12 minutes. I just don't know how many were on the order books. But it is kind of showing a demand for EV trucks, demand for Rivian, demand for, you know, I think the Hummer is going to do pretty well. I think the Silverado EV, the Lightning is going to do very well. The frustrating part is with so many supply chain issues and everything else, we're getting excited about new cars, and we're kind of losing sight that these cars are 2 years, some cases 3 years away.
Yeah, where is the Hummer, the electric Hummer?
I think that's going to come out this year.
Mm-hmm.
So the Lightning, orders were placed, production starts June, July, and they're going to start delivering vehicles in September. So September is going to be kind of the first of those, of all of the brands. Rivian came out with their pickup truck. They delivered just about 1,000 vehicles, and now they're saying they're going to run into some delays. They wanted to get that initial truck out there.
Is it a chip thing?
It is. It's a resources thing. It's a chip thing. There's more to it than that. You know, it's a new company. Ford is the only one who went out and said, we promise to make 80 to 90,000 Lightnings in the first year. We're going to double capacity to 150,000. And the only reason why they can get away with something like that and a Rivian can't is because Rivian doesn't have any other cars in their lineup. They've only got the one. They're a new company. Ford is saying we can pull resources and chips and whatever from other things that aren't really selling well, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe Ford Escape or something in the Lincoln lineup, and we can, you know, pull whatever we need there to build the Lightning. So they're the only one out there with press releases and promises of going, we're doubling capacity. We're not delaying. We're not saying, hey, we're going to do half as many as we thought because we can't get chips. We can't get people. We can't get this and that. So Ford's being rewarded with sales and stock price. You know, since Farley's taken over, their stock has doubled.
Wow. Well, where is Tesla in the pickup truck department? Because we all remember the thing with the shatterproof glass.
That broke, yeah.
That shattered. That's coming on 3 years,
yeah,
4 years.
Still delays. I'm sure the Tesla fans know more.
Was there something with Rivian, or did it just kind of look semi like a Rivian?
No, the Cybertruck was kind of the wedge-shaped thing.
It was very stealth-fiery.
Yeah, and I mean, I know Elon Musk did stuff with Leno, and they drove it around. But I don't know. Chris, see if you can find a date, because I think they pushed that again. They said it wasn't a super high priority for them, and they're going to make some changes to the truck. But I don't know. But Tesla seems to be doing pretty well. They delivered a lot of vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And in the EV world, you know, they've got a decade under their belt. So, I mean, as wacky as Elon Musk is, he did put it out there not too long ago. He was like, hey, Rivian, congratulations. You just went public. You're worth a fortune. But now you got to make the cars. And that's really tough. Trust me, from a guy who's been doing it for a decade now. And, of course, 2 months later, Rivian's like, this is really tough to make cars. We're going to go ahead and delay stuff, which is to be expected, but I think some of these, especially these young companies, are getting so caught up in the fundraising portion of it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they need money to do this, that the hype machine behind the fundraising far exceeds the ability to make these cars, which they'll get there. We just, as the consumers, we need to kind of understand the truth of what's happening. The Rivian is highly rated. It looks cool. It's got some good features. The media that's tested it and had time with it, they're like, this is a game changer. This thing is cool. But Rivian's stock has taken a pretty big hit recently because they said, hey, we lost a top executive. We lost our COO. We're delayed on making vehicles. The long-range version is going to be pushed a year. So now all of the reality is setting in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I can't wait to drive one. They look cool. They look interesting. It's kind of the right size and some good features. And
yeah. It's weird in L.A. that you see tons of Tesla sedans and then just tons of full-size pickup trucks.
Yeah.
I'm always surprised why you see so many full-size pickup trucks in L.A. Now, I get the construction guy and the gardener, but these things are too clean. Like a lot of them. And there's a lot of guys that are doing building and stuff like that. But I mean, it's just lots of full size pickup trucks mixed with Teslas.
Yeah. It's funny. I talked to a guy who's a friend in Texas who's in the oil business. And his job is on site, on the holes in the ground where they drill the oil. So it's you know, it's very kind of blue collar, that stuff. And came by, picked me up in his truck, and it, you know, just a full size, I don't know, F-250 Harley Davidson King Ranch, every feature, blah blah blah, $100,000 pickup truck, the nicest pickup truck. And I was like, hey, you got this thing is a hell of a rig. Have you thought about something else? I don't know, BMW SUV. He's like, yeah. He goes, but I go to the job sites. And those guys would ridicule me if I showed up in like a BMW X7. He goes, I got to drive a truck. I go, yeah, but it never gets dirty. He's like, I know, but I got to drive a truck.
Yeah, it's interesting that the the vehicle is being used to send the message, and it used to be a message that was not, it was sort of apolitical. It's like the message is, I got a Mercedes, I'm a rich guy. That's, or I have a Rolls Royce, I'm a rich guy. Like, yeah. That was the message. Now it's like, I'm down with the cause with the Tesla, or fuck everyone, I'm a Trump voter.
I got
a truck. I got a King Ranch. And so it's now sending a message, which, for me, whatever.
We do have a lot of people that don't live in LA that work in LA with trucks, right? So a lot of people come drive to LA during the day.
Yeah, but as a guy who spent well over a decade on a construction site, I can tell you the difference between a work truck and a truck that someone is driving around sending a message. Like, every guy I worked with, those work trucks look like work trucks.
Yeah.
And if they didn't, they got converted pretty quick because they start using them and they just turned into work trucks.
Yeah. There's got to be guys that have more than one, right? Like, you're mm-hmm. a boss, you're a manager, mm-hmm. you have your work truck, but because you like trucks now, you have the nice truck for you.
Right.
Right.
You got the timeline on the Cybertruck, the Tesla Cybertruck?
Yeah, so it was revealed back in 2019
mm-hmm.
and originally slated to launch end of 2021. And then,
of course,
they pushed it to 2022, then late 2022, with production expected to fully ramp up by next year. But now that we're in 2022, Tesla mysteriously removed any mention of the launch from its official site, merely saying that, quote, we'll be able to complete your configuration as production nears. A lot of people are saying that's because when they moved to Texas, the Gigafactory in Texas, that's where these Cybertrucks are going to be built. It's still under construction.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, all the supply chain issues as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, our point is we're not blaming them for being flexible and moving. You know, you've got to go with it, right? There's COVID, there's supply chain issues, there's cash flow issues, but it just seems like, especially the young EV companies, they get so behind the hype machine. Everyone's trying to be an Elon Musk, you know, either an individual is or the company is, and just a lot of promises and not a lot of execution. But I don't know, maybe we as consumers cut everyone a little too much slack on just letting people just say whatever they want. You know, hey, new truck next year. Okay. Not next year, maybe the year after or whatever, or whenever we feel like it. You know,
yeah, well,
there's a bit of a hype machine.
I'm still not sure what's up with the Tesla supercar that was going to go over 200 miles an hour.
Yeah, the new Roadster, right?
Right.
The convertible hardtop. Yeah, I have no idea what's going on with that. That car looked cool on paper. It seemed cool. Some people did some ride-alongs when they made it, but when they made it, people were questioning, it's like, what is it made out of? Like, is it something on an existing platform that they just turned up the wick on and rebodied and who knows what? But that car looks cool. I would love to see that.
Yeah, well, it seems like only yesterday Leno was out taking that thing for a spin, not with Elon at the headquarters, at SpaceX,
yeah.
I think, not at the drag strip doing the quarter mile with the
like
Plaid.
The Plaid, yeah.
Right. But I don't know where that car is either. I don't know where that car
is. They haven't done much. So they announced that one in 2017. The only big change they have done is they canceled any more reservations, or they cut off any more reservations, but there's no word on it yet. They haven't released anything else about it.
So, you know, Elon's definitely got some P.T. Barnum in him.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like in today's news cycle, why not roll that way? Because people just forget and turn the page and move on.
And it's entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, like it's kind of entertaining. People kind of want to see what he has to say. Other people as well, right? I mean, it used to be you'd use that as a gimmick and that was how you'd build, you know, the entertainment value of your company. That's a Vince McMahon at WWE, right?
Mm-hmm.
Vince McMahon, the businessman, is kind of a different person than Vince McMahon, the on-air character.
Right.
You know, the billion-dollar showdown and is strutting into the ring. Like, that's the Vince McMahon, the character. But he obviously built a big company out of it, but he's not as gimmicky in real life.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm a fan of Elon. I hope they keep it coming. I do worry a little about making these proclamations and then not really delivering on them.
Yeah.
I remember the 200 mile an hour plus super electric car always sound a little dubious to us. But now other electric cars have sort of come out and gotten into that range.
The acceleration is wildly fast. The top speed is getting there, you know, but we're learning more things like we talked about before. Is like we're learning more in weight reduction. We're learning more in battery efficiency. We're learning more in aerodynamics to make it happen before we even get to new batteries. But I think we mentioned, what was it last week, a startup company out of Detroit was developing like some kind of like two-stage battery, and they put it into a Tesla. They just took a stock Tesla, took out the battery that's 300-something mile range, put theirs in, and they did 720 miles or 750 miles. And it has like a 150-mile range battery, which is all the quick discharge, fast accelerating battery, mated to another bigger portion of the battery that fed that one. So it was like the big one keeps the little one charged and the little one makes your car go fast.
Yeah, and it's coming. I mean, it's all about the batteries, and the batteries are moving pretty fast, and I just think it's going to be just a few short years. I still, you know, made the prediction that when my twins turn 16, which will be in about 6 months, their first car may be an electric car.
They're becoming more affordable. But by the way, all the electric cars have always been sort of a luxury item. But now we're seeing, you know, Hyundai, Kia, like, you know, Ford Maverick, which is a hybrid version, which is getting huge reviews. Like, these are all turning out to be fairly affordable cars. You don't have to just get like a Chevy Bolt or a Nissan Leaf. Like, now we're getting to some cool looking vehicles that are a little less sort of new technology, iPhone looking, white plastic dash, and a little more realistic looking. And the range is going to get there. I agree with you. We're 2 to 3 years away from all of these cars going 500 miles or more.
Well, I mean, let's be realistic. Let's say this. The average range of an internal combustion car 20 years ago was 320 miles or something like that, maybe 370 or something. I don't know. But the average range of an electric car was like 31 miles or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, if people want to start talking about range, well, range is something that's kind of defined by the predecessor internal combustion car. So if we've all, you know, if you drove a BMW 3 Series and the range was 341 miles on a full tank of gas, well, then that's the range. And several years ago, an electric car, the range was 31 miles, and then it was 86 miles, and then it got to 150. Now it's, you know, knocking on the door of 300 and exceeding 300. So
yeah,
once you start talking about, you know, range anxiety, well, the range is, it's not an arbitrary number. It's just sort of what we're used to.
Right.
And if you're used to 350 miles range per tank of gas, then once electric gets to 350, we're there. We're even.
Right. Except the amount of time to charge. I think what's going to happen is the electric cars are going to start to get into that 400-500 mile range, and cars are still going to be 300 gas cars because gas cars can fill up in 5 minutes. Now, everyone's going to say, hey, you can charge this battery really fast, but now you basically need a nuclear power plant at your home with, you know, gloves and a hazmat suit to plug it in. But also what they're trying to tackle is, what does it do to the battery when you fast charge it that quickly? Like, you know, if you own the car for 10 years, do you get to own it for 7 now if you do it that way every night? So
yeah.
They're like, hey, you know what might be easier? Range. Let's just make it go 500 or 600 miles. If we can get there first, then we'll work on how many times you can fast charge it.
Cycle.
Yeah.
What happened to the charge plate?
Yeah, that was another there was two ideas that were kicked around. I don't recall if they were both Tesla or not. Tesla had the one where they're saying the battery is insignificant to your car. Like, you don't need to like own it and wash it and polish it and own it and like hug it. It's just like they're saying, hey, what about a future where you're driving to Vegas, you pull your Tesla up, a machine comes up underneath, takes out all the screws, swaps in another battery, you're on your way in 10 minutes, right? So who cares whose battery it is,
right?
So there was that. But then there's the charge plate in the garage. It's like you just pull your car in, and like your phone, you just put it on a charging pad now, you know, just drive up, and then it the plate underneath starts to charge the car. Probably can't do it as fast, and probably some issue when the cat runs under the car and a cat explodes because of the foot of clearance, the 4 inches of 4.5 inches of clearance of something's going on there. I don't know that we've tested that yet, but probably some version of that. I don't know. Maybe it's probably sort of a trickle charge version that, that makes that happen. But I think the focus has been on get the most range out of a vehicle. Then we can focus on like that that cycling that you talked about. How many times can we charge this and how fast each time? I'm sure the car manufacturers would probably prefer you plug it in overnight and let it do its thing for 8 hours as opposed to plugging it into some other scenario where, you know, you try to top it off in 20 minutes and get 80% of the charge. That has to be way more complex.
Yeah, the thing about the electric thing is I've been charging up my Lincoln. I think it's about 2021, but it's a range. It's a tank extender, basically, is what it is. But there's still that thing. I jumped into it yesterday at the other shop when I was driving home, and it said 20 miles on the range. And by the time I got 3/4 of a mile down the road, it was at 15. And it's like, they got to do a little better calculations than that. It says 20.
Yeah.
I'm sure they could tell me reasons why it was at 15 before I got onto the freeway, but it defeats the purpose. It flies in the face of your range calculator because it says 20. I get in, I should be passing the Glendale Galleria by the time it gets to 15, and I'm just getting on the freeway, and we're at 15 already. And it kind of does that to you, and it'll create a little anxiety because it's a little catch-as-catch-can, because it's like the reality is I live 11 miles away, so if I see 20, I'm in the clear. But if it drops to 15 in 300 yards, I'm not so sure anymore.
Yeah, now you're sweating it a little bit.
I'm doing
like
the math.
If you tried to do it in just pure EV mode, it'd be like, hey, we were wrong about the 20.
It'll usually drop down and then kind of catch itself and flatten out and then go into a little more consistent mode.
But does it say 15 miles range for the next 4 miles?
Yeah, it is a little, I mean, maybe I'm asking too much, but it's, you know, I wouldn't say we're at the infancy of this stuff, but we're still working it out a little bit. Yeah. A car like my car with a plug-in range, you know, it's 19, 20, 21. They get that thing to 50 miles, I'd be in the clear.
Right. If it was 50 miles and then realistically, depending on the radio and the air conditioning, whatever, and it got you 35, you're still good.
Right.
Right. Like for what you wanted to do.
Right.
And you gave it some margin of error. I mean, like, 50, 48. I just need 35 to feel comfortable. Okay.
Yeah, the problem is when it's 19 and it drops down to 11 fast, it's like it doesn't offer that much security.
It doesn't.
All right, we'll do a slightly shorter commercial-free show for you guys today. You guys can check me and Bill Shatner out and Dennis Quaid out at the Improv.
I love this lineup, by the way. Shatner and Quaid.
They're great.
They're great.
I mean, it's two separate shows.
I mean, two wildly different people, but both are entertaining. Can you buy tickets to both shows?
Oh, yeah. Two totally different shows. That'll be February 6th. At the Brea Improv, and you just go to amcroll.com for all the live shows and check out our YouTube page because we put a lot of stand-up up there. What do you got, Motorator?
You know, just follow me at Motorator on social media, getting excited about heading out to Barrett-Jackson in a couple weeks, and I'll post some photos of this Genesis. I think you guys dig it.
So until next time, Adam Kroll for Matt the Moderator, DeAndrea saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.